You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 601, the catch-up episode.
I'm Lewis, the lifeguard, and happy to say I rescued a drowning potato today. They drowned it in sour cream. Oh, what a shame, because food's so much better when it's practically plain. So don't drown your food in mayo, salt, ketchup, or goop. Yuck! It's no fun to eat what you can't even see. So don't drown your food.
And this is episode 601. And more, when you heard the word ketchup, did you think of ketchup or ketchup the condiment?
Ketchup the condiment, which made me think of the ketchup song, which I believe was on a Just Dance. And it's in like Spanish or something. And it's really, really catchy.
What is the ketchup song? I've never heard of.
Wait. I think it's called the ketchup song. It's like, it is. Oh, I can't do the pronunciation, but it's like, I'll just send it to you.
Okay. I will listen to the ketchup song. How people, have you ever heard the ketchup song? Cause I sure have not.
I haven't, but I remember the there used to be like these like public service announcement for kids on the on TV, like especially on Saturday mornings. They would play them like in between the cartoons, and it was supposed to be about stuff that was like just general good messaging for kids. And one of them was about like warning you not to use too many condiments. And I remember all the words to it if you'd like to hear it.
Yes.
It was like, I don't remember the melody. It was like, don't drown your food in mayo or ketchup or goop. It's no fun to eat what you can't even see. So don't drown your food. But I still am like, it was like the 80s. There was like far more problematic stuff to be like warning kids about than like that maybe they were going to use too much like mayo or mustard. So I'm not sure why that was considered so important. It was a catchy tune.
I wonder if that's racist, because the Mexican cuisine is filled with condiments, and adding condiments on the already condimented food is not only encouraged but saluted, which I approve of as well. So
they didn't mention like salsa or like anything specifically Mexican in the commercial. So it did not feel racist at the time.
Why would they care about you put like multiple condiments on? Like, what's the idea behind that?
I don't know. And the other ones were like, yeah, like don't get into your parents' medication. There was like the other ones had like, oh yeah, that one was like, we're not candy, even though we look so fine and dandy. When you're sick, we come in handy, but we're not candy. That one was really good. And I get the logic in telling children not to go like eating prescription medications. But the condiments one, I'm still scratching my head.
Well, the world will never know. But speaking of something the world did know about, Jello Biafra, we had him on Punk News Podcast episode 600 last week. If you haven't listened, you have got to go listen to it. Jello was in fine form. He was talking to politics. He was talking the band stuff. He was talking about his personal life a little bit. He was talking about how he feels and basically just being 100% Jello. And I got to say, I had a lot of fun. I thought it was real cool. While we were recording, I was looking at Hallie Bull, and we were both laughing because we asked Jello, like, you know, something like, what's a cool show you've seen recently? And somehow we twist that into why people should appreciate, like, not the MC5, but who was it? Was it Grand Funk Railroad or Paul Revere? No, Steppenwolf. It's like he's going on and on about like why people should like Steppenwolf. And I'm just looking at Hallie and Jello loves to talk. And so there were definitely times in the interview where we really had to kind of jump in and punch him back so we could actually ask some questions. But I got to say, I listened back to the whole thing. And actually, it seemed to be surprisingly listened. Like while we were recording it, it seemed like Jello was going all on extended answers for a lot of things. But listening back, it actually sounds a lot more tighter than it felt like while we were recording it.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, I did think it was all over the map, but I was expecting that, and that's him, and he's the person Jello, we're interviewing, and like that, you know. And if you're a fan of his, you know, I think are like you're kind of happy to go on that journey with him, you know. I like really I was really blown away by just how much information he has in his head about all sorts of different topics and how he can just like bounce from one to the other. And I really, the things that I asked him, like it really meant something to me to be able to ask him those questions, honestly, because in, I don't know, he, getting his perspective on politics, like, I don't know, there was something very comforting to me about talking to him about that stuff. So I was really psyched to get the opportunity. I thought he was like kind of a delight. And I actually took a screenshot of the three of us all laughing with like him with just, you remember he turned his phone up so that it was just like pointing at the ceiling because he didn't want to be on camera, which I totally respect. Yeah. But like, so I have this really funny, I have to send it to you guys. It's like really funny screenshot of like the three of us laughing and then just like Jell-O's ceiling in the other, in the other corner of the screen.
One question I did want to add, like, honestly, I really had to pick and choose the questions because, I love Jell-O, cool thing about Jell-O is he gives no hold bars answers. Like he doesn't answer as to what would be, quote, the best stance for him to take. He answers from his heart, which is great. Mm-hmm. But he talks a lot, which I love. But so you have to pick and choose your questions. One question I want to ask him is like Jell-O be like, it's like, so Jell-O, you know, what do you think of the Dead Kennedys reissues? And somehow he's on like Nancy Pelosi's husband, who is a co-owner of the LRC Corporation, which was known for being, you know, associating with the Super PAC. And he's going off of, like, I wanted to ask him, like, Jell-O, how is me a normal person supposed to keep, like, how I can't keep track of all these issues? What should I do as a normal person? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And what did you think of your Jell-O interaction?
It was so cool. It was really, really interesting because I wasn't sure, like, going in, I kind of had an idea of like, okay, this is who I think he's gonna be, and then it was like, yep. Like 100% more or less, like that was it. That was really, really cool. When it's like what you see someone do and how they speak, and then that's how they actually are. I think that's really, really cool. Yeah, like same thing. I had a bunch of questions and then I narrowed it down, and then it's like, oh, I'll just ask this one because it's about music and maybe like we can talk about music. And then that turned into like politics. And I was like, ah, cool. So I know a good amount about like American politics, but I learned a lot more during this. So it was really cool though.
Is it you're like a history masterclass? It was, yes. It was like being able to talk to like an elder statesman, like I don't know how to like, I know that he, for the by and large, shares my politics, and like my mom does too, but I can't talk to my mom about politics in the same way. I don't know. I can stop talking about it. It was really cool. I enjoyed that opportunity, you know?
Well, I hope listeners did too. I always love talking to Jell-O. Jell-O really is. He walked like Penny Rimbaud, like Keith Morris. He walks the walk and he talks the talk. So Jell-O really is super rad. I got a couple of quick things to point out. One super quick thing I'm going to point out is, and this doesn't really have anything to do with punk. InfoWars, Alex, what's that guy's name? InfoWars.
Jones.
Alex. So if you've been watching the news at all, like, well, on punk news, a recurring theme is, we like, bad people act bad and they always get away with it. It's really great. And it really is just a small piece of people that should be taking punishment. But it is so great to see Alex Jones just getting the crap beat out of him on the stands and him lying and like, and the other attorney be like, you're perjuring yourself right now. You know, like it's really, it is nice to see just at least once the bad guy getting beat up a little bit. You know what I mean? So.
But are there going to be any real repercussions?
Well, like, I mean, he's got millions of dollars. Well, great question. He's got millions of dollars. Hopefully they'll be able to get some of those millions out of him. I know he threatened to file for bankruptcy, and depending on what state you are in, like for example, OJ's in Florida, and the reason OJ lives in Florida is because no matter how much you owe, your primary residence can never be levied, which means you could have a $3 billion house, and even though you filed for bankruptcy, no one can take that from you in Florida. So it appears Alex
sounds
Jones
like a great place for criminals.
Yeah, it does.
It's our new state slogan.
Great place. So anyways, he's probably going to try to do that, but bankruptcy isn't quite that simple, particularly someone like him who's probably committed fraud and perjury and stuff. And so you can attack those bankruptcy laws, or some can be in not able to protect you if certain circumstances are met at the federal level. So hopefully something like that will happen. We'll see. We'll see. At any rate, a couple of quick things, and then we got a bunch of catch up news. But I got just a couple of quick stories. So I was selling records again like 3 weeks ago, and the guy is always bothering me, Ed.
The return of Ed.
This was two great ones. Just like there's this hippie guy that comes around, and he was in the military. And I know he was in the military because he always talks about how he's in the military. So he's kind of like Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump. Like he's in the military, but he's kind of a hippie. And he comes up to me and he's like, "Do you have any old Beatles records?" And I'm like, "I sure do," you know. And he's like, "I love the Beatles. I've got 117 Beatles records." And like Ed is like walking behind him trying to cause trouble. And Ed goes, That's a start. And the guy, like he's trying to like insult the guy for some reason. Like 117 Beatles records isn't a lot of records, which it totally is, you know? and like the hippie guy's like, he's a harmless guy. Like, why are you dogging on this guy, Ed? You know what I mean? But see, Ed didn't know that Ed's a seller. And the hippie guy just thought Ed was just some crazy dude. So I like gave the hippie guy like the weirdo eyes. The hippie guy gave me the weirdo eyes back. So I just felt like Ed was just some insane guy walking around. Then later on, Ed's back again, and I'm selling some records, and Ed's like just walking behind like my customers saying, "No one's buying today. Terrible customers today. And so I just like look at the people. Like I realized like the angle works. So I look at the people like with the crazy eyes in the back, because they just think it's some crazy guy walking around. I really enjoyed that. Here's the real story. So I'm selling records, and this young punk comes up, man. This guy was a twerp, man. Like this dude was straight out of Central Casting, Karate Kid Part 2, you know. This dude's like 15-16. He's got on the polos, he's got on the khakis, he's got on the cool guy glasses, you know. He's Mr. Cool Guy Jones, you know. And there's this girl kind of hanging around with him, and I definitely got the vibe the girl was crushing on the guy. And I definitely got the vibe that the guy wasn't interested, but he's using this girl for money, which was that was definitely the vibe I was getting, you know. And he's like, "Oh, he's got Led Zeppelin." And I had like a $35 Led Zeppelin record, which it's a more expensive Led Zeppelin record. And she's like, "Well, I'll get that for your birthday." And I'm thinking to myself, "Don't get that for his birthday. Don't buy that record. You know, this guy's an asshole," you know. And the guy's like picking up this Led Zeppelin record, that, and he's like, "Well, I didn't get you anything for your birthday." She's like, "Yes, you did. You got me this keychain. It was like a 50-cent keychain or something." You
know? No.
And she keeps saying like, "Let me get it for your birthday. Let me get it for your birthday." And I'm like, "This guy's an asshole." And next to me, there was like a jewelry, like someone selling jewelry. And he walks up to this girl who was like 16. And he's like, "You should get this earring." And it was like a pentagram. And the girl's like, "I don't think my mother would approve of that," you know. And so like he thought that was hilarious. Like he thought he was, you know, he's like hitting on this other girl in front of his other girl. And like, she's clearly like smitten with him, but he's like a dick. And, you know, and so he's like, he keeps on this Led Zeppelin record. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I should say something to her. Like, maybe I should say like I should say, "Well, you know, don't buy this guy's record because he's just being kind of a dick." But then I thought, no, that'd be weird and creepy, and they'd probably get me kicked out if I said something like that, right? So I'm thinking, how can I ruin the sale? And I'm thinking, well, I could be an asshole to them or something, and then they'll go away. But then I realize, but then she'll still like him, you know, and not realize that he's being the jerk, and they'll just think I'm some weirdo, you know. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, well, maybe this is one of the things you kind of got to learn yourself, you know, like no one can teach it to you, and you just got to take your licks. And then, you know, realize what happened later on down the road. And then I thought, that's real convenient, John, that what needs to happen is you getting $35, you know. And I'm like, damn, I'm in a real quagmire here. And then I looked, they left. So the guy comes back later on. No. He said, no, I'm not sure if I have this one or not. And then they left. And then he came back without her and bought it himself. And I'm like, you know what? This kid's not as big of a dick as I thought he was. So, you see, because he knew that she was trying to buy stuff for him, but he didn't want her to.
I love that you felt that you could analyze like such deeply into this couple's relationship just from the exchange at the record
store. Well, they weren't a couple. I mean, I analyze people all day long. You know what I mean? let me tell you a gross story, and then we'll get to work. So, and more. Did you see that picture I sent to you?
I did. Of Hallie the box.
Hallie Boy, did you see that picture I sent to you?
I've seen the box.
Okay. So about 3 weeks ago, I never go to the Goodwill to buy records because I haven't gotten a good record at Goodwill in like 10 years. And I still go like an idiot. Like what's that phrase? Like insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. And every 3 months, I still go to Goodwill. Like, well, maybe there'll be something there this time. Cause I see like people on Instagram. Look at this Black Flag record I got from Goodwill for 50 cents. Every time I go, it's like $7 Bing Crosby records. You know what I mean?
And but so those people must live in like the middle of nowhere, don't you think?
I know.
Where there's just like, that's where, you know, like where there's no one's buying, no one's looking, no one is there to scoop up the Black Flag record before you get there. So it just sits there until you find it. You know, when to you in Philly.
Goodwill specifically hires people to go through records and price them, because if you go on eBay, they'll have like a $200 like Led Zeppelin record and Goodwill selling it. Mm-hmm. That's been donated to them, mind you. And they're not even really a nonprofit corporation, you know.
Oh, they're not. So, this is so funny that you're saying this. Is actually just bought a book from Goodwill on eBay today, like earlier today. And I was thinking like, oh, well, Goodwill, I don't really know that much about them, but I think they do good stuff. Wait, are you telling me they don't do good stuff? Or that they're
Goodwill's like super rotten.
They like, are? Like,
Yeah.
I just gave them $13, man.
Salvation Army is cooler than Goodwill. Goodwill is not. Goodwill might not be for profit, but I think they are for profit, but their CEO gets like millions and millions of dollars and their executives get like they don't donate to anything, you see, but people donate to them. It's like a total scam. Goodwill sucks.
But isn't Salvation Army like the anti-gay one?
Maybe. I don't know. Could be.
Okay. You know, if I'm wrong about that, listeners, don't like Google that before you decide you hate Salvation Army. But that's what I thought I remembered.
They might be. Their prices are more fair, I'll say that. But I will say, I definitely would not say Goodwill is better than Salvation Army. There's a million tiny thrift shops out there. They're all way better. Like Goodwill, so I can't say Goodwill. Anyways, so I go to Goodwill, and this dude, like the dude's putting out records, and I'm looking, and he's like, hey, do you just want to buy this box of records so I don't have to price them? And so I flip through them, and there's like some Led Zeppelin and some Kinks. I'm like, how much do you want? He's like, $10. I'm like, okay. And so I just bought the records. I didn't even look through them really. You know what I mean? I flipped through them briefly, and I put them in the back of my car, and I was going to a show. I come home, it's late, and I put them in my record room. And then the next day, I was working on an article, and I was using my Chrome box set. And then I'm done with it. I put my Chrome box set, but instead of putting it away, because I put it on top of that box of records, so I hadn't even gone through yet. A few days later, I go to put that stuff away, and I pick up my Chrome box set, which is in plastic wrap, you know, a big sleeve. And on the underside, there's like this little brown speck, like a bit of mud. I'm like, that's weird. Like, how did mud get on this? That's weird, you know? And so I kind of like brush it off and I put it away. And then I go to pick up my box of records, and the bottom falls out entirely. Now, Emmore, I want you to describe the picture that you saw.
It was a box that looked like it had been chewed through.
On the bottom, right?
On the bottom, yeah.
What do you think did that, Emmore?
Rat.
Hallie Boy, what do you think did that?
No, I don't want to guess.
So I pick up the box. The records completely fall out all over the bottom, tumbling out with the records. Literally 5,000 maggots, not 1,000 maggots, 5,000. It was out of a heart. Like there were so many maggots, they were like piled on top of each other and like crawling around on top of each other.
Oh,
they fall on my ground. I'm like, holy shit. I ran in my bathroom and got insect spray. I'm spraying them.
I am dead. I can't be on the podcast anymore. I am dead right now. You are saying maggots so many times, John. I mean,
I don't necessarily like killing insects, you know what I mean? But like, it's them or me, literally. Like one of those bastards gets away, it's going to destroy my house. I'm coating the floor with insect spray. You know, they're flipping me off as they're running away, because maggots are like run away from you. But the maggots have like 20 legs, so they're like flipping me off like 18 times and like running on their hind legs. And they're like, fuck you, John. So I'm like spraying them. Like they're running all over the room. I'm spraying the shit out of them. It literally took me probably 20 minutes to kill them all. You know what I mean? I literally had to get like a dustpan, a broom, and like sweep them up and stuff. And what they had done is they literally ate through all the records and left the actual records, but they ate the cardboard. They like ate up through all the records and then covered all the records in like this brown slime. I don't know if it was maggot crap or maggot vomit, or I have no. So like I had, it looked like I took records and like dipped them in like mud. And the reason the Chrome box set had that little speck of mud is because they ate up through all the records and got to the Chrome box set, which is a very rare box set. But because it was in plastic, they must have stopped and went back down. It was insane and straight out of a horror movie. It was gross hell.
My face is going to have this like ick expression on it for like the rest of the week. It was horrible. But wait, I don't understand. So when you looked at the records, they were fine. But the maggots were just laying in wait. Like the Where did the maggots come from?
They were already in the bottom of the box, but they were just hatching or something. And I didn't know because I didn't really look through the box.
Oh, my.
That's awful.
And you know, like one maggot will turn into like 100 maggots in literally like a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like cockroaches. So there was probably like 10 of them in there. And I left it for like 3 days and there was literally like 5,000. Like they were piled on top of each other like a swarm. It was gnarly, man. It was gnarly. Anyways, this is a song by Bjork called It's Raining Maggots. And we'll be right back. And we are back, and we're getting off to a late start. I don't know how far we're going to get, but we're going to – oh, I also got to mention this. On August 27, Camp Punksylvania is throwing a show in Philadelphia. It's the kickoff to their Camp Punksylvania Fest, which is around Harrisburg. It's in Scranton, PA on September 9 through 11. They got a million bands playing there, including Guttermouth, Casualties, Get Dead, and a whole bunch more. Camp Punksylvania is throwing the kickoff show, which is August 27. We're sponsoring the event, which basically means our name is on the flyer. We're not really throwing it, but I'm going to be there, and Froggy's headlining the show at Philomoka with Fat Chance on August 27 at Philomoka. So be sure to come on out, and it's going to be a good time. So, yeah. Meanwhile, here's another fun story. Music Midtown Fest has been canceled. Why has it been canceled? Because traditionally, Music Midtown Festival, which has been around for about 20 years, says no guns are allowed at our festival, which seems pretty reasonable to me because at festivals, people like to get drunk and bump into each other. And also, of course, people remember in Las Vegas, not that long ago, there was that horrible sniper incident at the Country Western Music Festival, which was a true, very real tragedy. So anyway, Music Midtown Fest says, no guns at our festival. You can come, but you got to leave your guns at home. Well, unofficial guns rights organizations, guns rights organizations, have basically emailed and sent letters to the festival that says, if you don't allow guns at your festival, we are going to challenge you on state grounds, not federal grounds. State grounds. And the case that these gun rights advocates refer to is a state called GeorgiaCarry.org versus Atlanta Botanical Gardens. And in that case, Atlanta Botanical Gardens is a private, no, it actually might be a public
entity. It's public, that's the whole issue, right?
Yeah, it's a public entity that rents or uses public grounds. So the botanical gardens didn't want people with guns to come on to the property. The guns holder said, no, we should come on with our guns because, you know, the botanical gardens is a real dangerous place where you might get a shootout. Mm-hmm. And so the state Supreme Court, using the 2019 or 2018 Georgia law, which said guns cannot be prohibited from any public place, which is insane. They said you can't ban guns on the Botanical Gardens. So that means that Music Midtown Fest was very concerned because they are a private organization, but they have a short-term lease on public grounds, which means under the Supreme Court interpretation and under the new-ish law, were they to ban guns, they might be liable for infringing upon, quote, the rights of state citizens and therefore be liable for lots of money. And so they had a difficult decision. They could either cancel the festival or let people in with guns at the festival, which isn't going to work out well in any context. So they canceled the festival, and that's the end of the story. Astoundingly, a few commenters in the punk news section said, yeah, that's the right thing. They should be allowed to have guns at the public music festival, which is insane. But yeah, this is crazy. How about this is just straight up crazy, right? I mean,
it's like, straight up crazy. And it's such a bummer because this festival was all ready to go. Like all the shit was booked. Like obviously the venue was booked. I mean, it's just the amount of work that went into organizing this, and now just like none of it gets to happen. Also, like the people suing, like they're not people that wanted to go to the festival. They're just like a fucking gun rights like organization that's just like scouring every fucking event just to like see who's like not allowing guns. Like they don't even, it's like, I don't even think there's a single fucking person that wanted to go to this show that cared enough about this to like sue over it or to like have the festival canceled. It's just an absolute, it's just, it's abominable. And the fact that you can like throw an event and you don't even get to say like, I don't want people with lethal weapons at this event. You know, like you can't even say that anymore. It's just, it's so disturbing really. And like, especially in Atlanta, it's like, right. I mean, I think there have been like 7 mass shootings in Atlanta. I mean, if you're calling a mass shooting something where like, you know, multiple people are shot, there've been like 7 mass shootings in Atlanta just this year. And then last year, wasn't Atlanta where the like really bad one with the guy running around to spas and like shooting Asian people? Wasn't that in Atlanta? I'm pretty sure. Well, it's just, this is a city where
it was,
you know, I mean, just, I don't want to go to a music festival if the person next to me is going to have a gun. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I don't feel safe. If that's what this is coming to, like that I can't go to a concert without knowing that there's someone standing next to me with a gun. Like then what do I just like, how free am I now? Cause I'm not going to want to fucking go places anymore. You know, like, I don't know. What else is there to say? It's so sad.
Well, really annoying about this is I actually have a friend that kind of went off on like this, and it really bummed me out. Is that like he was carrying a gun to the grocery store, and like I think they think they're being tough, but like what kind of little weenie needs a gun in the grocery store? Like you can't handle yourself in the grocery store. Like they're trying to make people think they're tough, but they're just showing that they can't handle themselves. Like they're wimps. You know, like who needs a gun at a music festival? You know, it just. But the other thing about this, and I'm going to try to be careful with my words here, but it's something that is definitely worth mentioning. Most of these gun rights guys are white guys, like, you know, get her done, you know, Trump, you know. But what if the people bringing guns to the music festivals were inner city black people? Would they still be this invested in this cause? You know what I mean? I don't think so.
No.
You know?
Nope.
So, you know, but I mean, like, the fact of the matter is, what we're pointing out doesn't even matter. With the Trump era, it's okay to be racist. And like people used to try to hide that they were racist or hated certain people or didn't even care about the truth and just wanted to lie to their side won and didn't really care about the truth at all. But after Trump, like none of that mattered. Like it's, quote, now acceptable to not care about reality and just lie for what you want and say it's our team, not what's right. Or to just openly be racist. It really is. You know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm moving to the Netherlands. I'll see you guys later. And more, solve this problem for us.
Guns are used for hunting, and they're used for hunting food for your family and yourself. And what you kill, you eat. That is all that guns are used for. That's all they should be used for in any situation at all, if they're not being used in a sustainable, healthy, survival way, in that way, melt them down and throw them in the river because they have no fucking place. And I think it is absolutely disgusting that guns have more rights than a lot of people in America.
Well said.
Melt them down.
Well, and we'll tell us about something cool. Tell us about gel and cold brass.
Yeah. Okay. So, Gel, we've talked about them on the podcast before. They're a New Jersey hardcore punk band, and they're super cool. They released Violent Closure, their EP, in 2021. And they just announced they're putting out a split with Cold Brats, and they are a really cool, they're a hardcore band, but they have, like, hints of, like, goth, and there's all sorts of, like, stuff going on. And they're from Romania. So they announced they're releasing a split together called Shock Therapy. So 4 new songs from Cold Brats and 3 new songs, plus their previously released single Mental Static from Gel. Mental Static came out last year, and it's also really, really good. So when they announced this, each band released one new song. So Gel's song is a Predominant Mask, and it's so good. It's like, if you like Gel, you're gonna like this song. It's just more is goodness there. It's just so good. I don't know, like, I was trying to figure out how to describe it in a way that like would actually convey how it sounds, and it's just, it's hardcore punk, there's distortion, there's lots of like drums. I can't wait to hear the full split. Like, the lyrics from what I can hear are really good. And Cole Bratt's new song is Please Checkmate, and it's chaotic, it's really good. The energy level is like at an 11. It's so lo-fi. There's so much going on. There's tambourine. There's screaming. It's great. And it's all under like 2 minutes. So I'm really excited for this split. I hadn't heard Cole Bratz before, so I listened to them. They released an album, I guess, last year called Punk in the Digital Age. And it's also really good. So the band seem to like complement each other well, and I'm really excited for it. And I think it's cool how it's like international, how it's like, yep, we're going to do a split from a US band and a Romanian band. Like, never would have heard of them. So that's just really cool. What did you guys think of the split and the songs?
Gel's cool. John, Gel's kind of like a sister band to Scowl. I know they're pals, and I know they play some shows together. Scowl is kind of more in the East, West Coast hardcore, where Gel is more of a kind of the East Coast hardcore kind of style. I think Gel is real cool. Actually, I think they're really, really cool. I dig them. I just think that they put out some 7-inches and stuff. I think they need to do that one extra little special thing to make them unique. I think they've got a great start, and I love the way they sound. That being said, there's a lot of hardcore bands that play very fast and noisy and distorted sounds, and I think Gel's got what it takes. But as a fan, I would like to hear them do maybe just one or two unique things, and I think that could take them from being an excellent to an amazing band. Halle Bullet, what do you think?
No, come on. No one wants to hear me talk about this kind of music. I don't even know what to say.
All right, fair enough.
No, you know, it's just harder than anything I listen to. I liked the Cold Bratz one a little better. There was just like a little bit more for me to grab onto. But right, like, they're not making this music for like Halle Bullet, like pop lover of pop, you know?
Halle, should we talk more about pop punk on the podcast, you think, Halle?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Well, how should we talk more about Joe Strummer and the endless regurgitation of stuff that's already out there? So a few years ago, they came out with this set called Joe Strummer 001, or was it 101 or 001, something like
001.
That. 001. And so they were like, it's a deep dive into Joe Strummer's, you know, personal unreleased stuff. It's got tons of unreleased amazing tracks, and it's just the beginning. And so everyone bought it, and honestly, like, it was not that good. It was really like just like Joe's scraps and demos and a few stray singles. Then it was really like a very low key feeling release, not that much energy, and a lot of stuff that was clearly not intended for widespread release. And then it seemed like, and then they released another greatest hit set that was just Strummer 101 with all the demo tracks cut out and just basically the greatest hits of the Mescaleros and maybe a couple of Earthquake Weather tracks. And so it had seemed like, well, I guess that's it for all the Joe Strummer rarities. We've got what we're going to get. Well, now they released Joe Strummer 002, which I don't know if this makes – I mean, it's basically all the Mescaleros albums. And listen, I'm a huge Clash fan. I'm a huge Joe Strummer fan. But I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy here. But what it is, it's all the Mescaleros 3 albums put together. And then there's a demos album, which is like – demos are always so underwhelming. They're 97 out of 100 times, they're just weaker versions of the actual song, and you listen to it like once or twice, and it just isn't that interesting. I will say a couple of things. But it's lazy, but here's why. Because the last Joe Strummer, the Mescaleros album, Street Core, had about 7 B-sides that were only available on CDs and the Japanese version. One of them was Joe Strummer and the Boys doing Blitzkrieg Bop live, and it's amazing. There's an Armageddon Time live one. I think maybe there's a Police and Thieves or something. So there's like 7 killer obscure CD B-sides from Street Corp, and Global Go-Go and Rock on the X. I have a few other ones as well. Not to mention, there's a Joe Strummer Live album called Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros Live at Acton Town Hall. And actually, it's one, it's not the last show we ever did, but it's one of the last shows we ever did. And Mick Jones shows up and they do three Clash songs. And it is an amazing, amazing live album. Instead of putting any of that in this set, we just get a bunch of demos that everyone's going to listen to once and really feel like they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. And so, A, it's called 002, so then what's left for 003? And B, it's like, it's kind of expensive, like $170 or something for like five or six records. And D or E or wherever I'm at, it just seems like, there's not that much Joe Strummer stuff left to find, and the stuff that they are finding is just kind of very low risk, gentle, not powerful music. And oh, but also, of course, famously, Street Core was finished after Joe Strummer died. And so the story is they took Joe's demos or some of his tracks and then beat them up. And arguably, that's why Street Core is the hardest rocking out of all the Mescaleros albums, is because maybe the hard stuff was added after he passed away. It'd be interesting to hear what was existing of Street Core before Joe passed away. And so there's a lot of routes they could have taken. And to me, it seemed they just kind of took like the least desirable road. I don't know, Hallie Bill, do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you think?
It definitely feels like maybe some of this stuff just feels unnecessary. And the fact that I like that Assembly compilation that came out last year, but
I like it too, but it's duplicative of Strummer 001. Exactly.
Yeah. No. Like it just doesn't feel like they're all necessary. That being said, in general, I don't get too worked up about this stuff. You know, it's like, if you're a collector and you want it, they put it out, buy it. Like, awesome. If you're like, meh, nah, like I have all this shit, or I'm not that interested in these demos or these rarities don't feel that special to me, then like, don't buy it. It does feel like people get, like they almost take it personally for the artist. I think especially when the artist isn't around anymore, like people think it's like somehow tarnishing Joe Strummer, like sullying his name to put out all of this like extra unnecessary stuff, or like, what's really the problem? Isn't it just like, buy it if you like it and don't buy it if you don't like it?
I would issue this counter argument in that, the Clash used to be my favorite punk band. Now they're not my very favorite punk band, probably, but they're still definitely one of my favorites. So mm-hmm. I want every single thing officially released by the Clash and Joe Strummer, right? Mm-hmm. And so it seems like it appears they're specifically relying on that obscure and hardcore need. That is, I want every single official thing released, you know? So they're like, oh, well, you want every single thing released? Then you guys spend $180 to get, you know, 15 songs in addition to stuff you already have that's not even that good, you know? And so, I don't have to buy it, and frankly, I'm not going to buy it, and this is where I'm drawing the line. But it does seem that the whatever company, Dark Horse or whoever, is specifically abusing the fans, whereas guys like Neil Young, Frank Zappa, the Melvins, any band that does a lot of archival stuff, it can be done well and tasteful. Neil Young is a great example. Frank Zappa is a great example. Like, here's stuff that if you're a hardcore fan is useful to you and you should check out and will like. And even if you don't love it, it's interesting. Whereas here, they're making you rebuy stuff you already have.
They're not making you. I think it's so funny. Like, I understand the idea of like being a completionist, but it's like, if you're a completionist to the point of like buying stuff you don't like or don't think is necessary to have in your collection. I mean, yeah, I guess maybe they're taking advantage of people's like OCD about things, but I'm glad to hear that you're drawing the line, because it does not sound like you're excited about this at all. You know,
all I'm saying is it would feel a lot better if they said, we're putting out a demos album and you can buy it for $35. That would feel a lot better than if you want the demos album, you got to spend $180.
Yeah, you know? No, that's valid. That I get. That I totally get.
And more, what do you think? And more's like, screw you, John. These demos are amazing.
Yeah, I'm sitting here surrounded by like the five copies I ordered and just like rocking. I do think this is a little much for like the price for what you get. Like, I like Joe Strummer. I don't know a lot about like the Mescalero stuff. I haven't really looked at that, but it does, nothing really seems too new. The video was cool though. I liked the video. For Road to Rock and Roll, there is a cactus with a cowboy hat and sunglasses, and he's carrying a boombox. And if they did something with that, I would buy that, but I wouldn't buy the box set.
One thing that I think people are kind of scared to say is for a hot minute, everyone's like, oh, the Joe Strummer and the Mescalero, some of it's better than the Clash. I mean, when I last reviewed the last Joe Strummer compilation, I kind of talked about this, and I'm glad I did, is, you know, like a lot of the Joe Strummer stuff is really good. Johnny Appleseed is really good. Street Corps.
Oh, I listened to Johnny Appleseed again today because we were doing this story. I was like, oh, I just got to go listen to Johnny Appleseed now. It's like so fucking good.
Street Corps is pretty much solid all the way through. But honestly, like especially Earthquake Weather, but even the first two Mescaleros, there's a lot of boring stuff in there that feels kind of aimless. And I realize you're not supposed to say that, but it's like, oh, you know, Time and Dog, play this violin. You over there, bang on that piano. I'm going to hit this box like it's bongos. X-ray style, let's go eat some mushy peas. You know, it's like, what are you talking about, Joe? I mean, like, I feel like you're not trying. So anyway, you know, I realize you're not supposed to say about that St. Joe, but, you know, a lot of Joe Strummer solo stuff is kind of boring. Some of it is amazing, but some of it is really boring. I'm sorry. I'm not scared to admit it anymore. Dark Horse made me say it. Anyways. Here's something that's not boring, but is it what we want? And is it? It's certainly interesting, but it's somewhat challenging. Off! Finally, they've released the first new track from the new album, Free LSD. Their last new album came out, counted 8 years ago. 8 years ago was Wasted Years. And of course, if you buy the old version of Wasted Years, there's a little sticker on the front that says Off is getting fiercer, scanner, harder and faster or something, written by John Gentile in Rolling Stone magazine, put right next to Raymond Pettibon's picture. So anyways, the new album is called Free LSD, and there's an associated movie, of course. The new album has a new rhythm section. So it's Keith and Dimitri and two new guys. And they released the first single, and it's called War Above Los Angeles. And it is somewhat different than other Off, and that it's about 2.5 minutes. No, it's three and a half minutes, which is really long for Off. But whereas most Off songs are a single theme, and they just bash the hell out of that theme, this song has like six or seven constantly changing parts. And it is much more, I would say, it's not technical in a sense like Dream Theater, but for Off, it's technical. And we've got a lot of changing gears in this one song. And I think a lot of the listeners were kind of caught off guard. Some people said they loved it. Some people were like, I'm not sure where this is going. Nobody said they hated it. But and more, what's your initial reaction to War Above Los Angeles?
I love it. It's so cool. Like it was way longer than I was expecting, but it's good. And I feel like it's setting things up because the album's like 20 tracks, I think, right? Like it's really long. So this is 100% part of like the story of it. And like the cover has the UFO and people looking at it. So it's like the War Above Los Angeles right there on the cover. So they're setting something up, and I think they're setting something up with the video too, because holy shit, there's so much going on in the video. Just like so much. Like there's people using the lyric sheet as an acid blotter. There's people having like acid trips. There's a doctor that shows up like randomly during the set, and over there. There are like bad guys, and some guys just going around shooting everyone. It's great. Like I want to know more about like that too, because like it fit really. I like the song. I listened to the song on its own, and then I listened to it with the video, and the video is just like, holy shit, what's going on? And this has to be like part of the movie somehow. Like this is just so good. So I am really excited for this album. I think it's promising, and I really like the direction they're going in, so I hope they continue with it. Hallie, what did you think?
I liked it. The video was very violent. Yeah, it's like very obvious, obviously very cinematic. And yeah, I don't know. I liked it fine. John, I mean, I feel like I'm like curious to know what you thought of it, because I feel like Off is so important to you.
Off is very important to me. And I think all three Off records are absolutely amazing. And Keith and Dimitri, so, like I said, I was very disappointed to see that Steve and Mario were out of the band. This track caught me off guard. I like the fact of the matter is if Off did Off 1, 2, and 3 are pretty much the same formula, like with some variation. But like, it works really well. It's kind of like, you know, David Bowie had phases, Brian Eno had phases. It's cool that they had that phase. But I think if they tried to do that again 8 years later, it would probably fall kind of flat or be insignificant. So I think they did have to do something new. Keith certainly is one of the greatest singers in punk rock, maybe the greatest. Or maybe Jello's the greatest. Both of them are up there. But Keith has somewhat of a limited range, and I think he would admit that. So they can't do like a reggae track, or they can't do like a funk track. It just wouldn't sound right. So what they did was kind of this manic gear shifting thing. And I will admit that I didn't love it right away. I wasn't like, oh, this is so great. I found the concept of gear shifting kind of challenging, if you will, or different, and did require some intense focus. But that being said, it's cool they're doing something different, and maybe this is going to be the Rudimentary Peni cacophony moment, in that Rudimentary Peni second album is a absolute masterpiece called Cacophony, and it's like 30 songs, but it's not even 30 songs, it's like 50 to 60 songs all jammed together with these constant movements. Another similar sample might be Ariel Pink's Pom Pom. I know Ariel Pink's a real D-bag, but the album is great. But what's cool about the Pom Pom, the album, is all the songs are constantly shifting, and one song flows into another, and it's like this massive, massive piece. Another example would be Flux of Pink Indians, their second album, which I'm not going to say the title because it's very offensive. I think this album might be like a multi-layered masterpiece where just constantly changing gears, and like this song references that song and this song references that song. And when you hear it as a whole, it all fits together. That being said, I didn't necessarily think this was a killer number one single with a bullet, but I'm holding out hope, and I'm glad they're doing something artistically challenging. And even if they fail, at least they tried. But I think it's going to be cool. I hope. So yeah, that's my thought.
Yeah.
Let's do one more story, and then let's do two stories. Then we'll play a song, and then we'll decide if we want to wrap it up or keep going. Lotion, multinational corporation, has announced their third album. And the new album is called War in the Danger Room. Lotion is going to be out September 2nd via Toxic State. I love Lotion. Lotion meshes together DB with anarcho, with straight up punk, with dance and EBM and industrial. And I think they're one of the cool, like often I'll say, like, you know, a recurring theme that I say, well, you know, the punk club in Philly had this hardcore band that everybody loves, but they sound just like every other hardcore band, and everyone's going to rave about them for 4 months and forget about them, and that's what always happens. Lotion is a punk band that is very unique sounding. This new track is honestly, it's pretty much just a direct sequel to their last album, which is fine with me because that album was amazing. That album was called World Wide Web. This new one is called War in the Danger Room. I'm loving it. I love Lotion. I hope they play a Philly show. I tried to book a couple of times, but they didn't answer their emails. So I would love to see them in Philadelphia again. This band is awesome. And more, I'm going to bet you love Lotion or you're a fan. True?
I am.
No.
No. Oh, no, they're a band that it's like, yes, I need to listen to them, and then I completely forget. And when I see Lotion, it reminds me of Lard, and then I listen to Lard, and then I forget about Lotion. So this actually worked out really
That was well. A great glimpse into the inner workings of your mind, Em.
They look similar. So this was the first time I listened to them with every last one. And oh my God, it was great. Like, I loved this song, and I'm going to listen to more of them. Because, like, it's nuts. It's like, here's this future that's not really that far off. And it's just crazy. And the singer's voice is amazing. Like, I don't know. You know how you hear people and you're like, how can I make that sound? It was one of those. It's like, I can't do that. I can't reach that tone. But that it was really cool. So I'm very glad that it was on the podcast. I'm very glad I checked it out. And I am now looking forward to this album and listening to the other ones too.
I like this. All right. If this had come out in the 90s, I would have definitely danced to this at my favorite new wave, like goth club, the Ivy, man. If anybody used to go to the Ivy on the corner of fucking, where was the Ivy? It was like on the border of New York and Connecticut. It was like the best new wave club, but they played a bunch of industrial and I don't know. This reminded me of stuff that I would have liked in the 90s. I thought it was pretty cool.
Fun fact, the singer is Alexander Hare or Air. He does really cool designs called Death Traders. I actually bought a jacket from him like 3 years ago. I've never worn it. And at this point, I'm like, well, maybe I won't wear it. I'll just resell it later on when it's super expensive. But he's designed clothes for like Solange and for like Tierra Whack and like all these like super famous and mainstream hip hoppers, which is kind of weird. It's a crust punk guy doing clothes for like Solange, Beyonce's sister, you know.
That is cool.
That's so cool.
So anyways, let's see here. M, tell us about Thick and then we'll play track.
Jack. Yeah. All right. Thick. They have released a video for their new song, Tell Myself. And this is their second single off their upcoming album. Their first one was Loser. This song is right now my favorite song by them. It is. I really like it. It's catchy. It's a little like it's kind of poppy. But like the lyrics are just so good. And again, I don't know if it's just like where I am right now in my life or whatever, but it just like, it speaks to me so much and it just like connects with me. And it's like, I heard the song and it's like, this is a part of myself now when you just have that like snap moment. So really like the song. The song is great. The video made me cry, and I'm not really sure why it did, but it did. So the video is like home footage, movies of the band when they were young, and then the band on tour as they are now, and playing shows. And there's like a small video of them opening for the Chats and all sorts of stuff. And it's a really cool video too. So I'm really looking forward to this album. I think it's going to be really good. They are playing in Toronto in the fall. When is that? So it's September. They're playing in September, and I'm going to try to make a point to go. But yeah, this is
on that like sick tour they're doing, right? Aren't they on tour with like so many good bands?
Skating Polly is on every day, and then Bad Waitress, Vile,
the Muslims.
Yeah,
that's gonna be good.
Yeah, so Toronto is Skating Polly and Bad Waitress, and I want to see Bad Waitress so badly because I was gonna go see them for their like album release party, and then shit happened, and I wasn't able to. So it's like I need to go. What do you guys think of Thick? It's a new song.
I thought the new song was fine. I often feel with Thick that like, I because they're a band that I saw live first. Like I saw them live before hearing them recorded, and I saw them live in like in a little venue. And they just like knocked me on my ass. They were so good. And then there's just something where like now every single time I listen to the recorded, it just doesn't quite get me the way I want it to. I don't know. It's just like that show was so good. It just set my expectations too high or something. So all I can say is, you know, people should go see them live. It is so completely and totally worth it. John, did you like this?
I've seen Thick live. They opened for the Chats and Mean Jeans, and they were real cool. This is not meant for me. It's not written for me. I thought it was fine, but it does have that like sad, reflective like emotion that I just don't have in me for some reason. I'm missing that synapse or synapse, and so it was good. I didn't love it, but you know, you can't win them all. You know, let's play a song. Emma, what should we play?
Let's play the Thick song. Yeah, let's do that.
All right. This is Thick doing Tell Myself, and we'll be back.
I've been hoping, I've been dreaming away. Now I wish I could.
And we're back. You guys want to keep rapping or do you want to wrap it on up?
Is there anything on here that is near and dear to your heart that you really want to talk about?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to get to it all eventually. I'll just blow through a couple of things and then we'll wrap this on up. Froggy has released their debut LP. It's called Hamburger. It's awesome. I dig it. I think this band is cool. It's got some of the grunge songs, some of the pop punk songs, and I think it's real cool. And more, Froggy, are you still a fan or do you hate them now?
I really like them. they are great.
They also released a video for Stupid Rich Boy. And if you watch the video for Stupid Rich Boy, I love the video. I especially like the part where there's like a kid like hanging out by the pool, cleaning out the pool, but he's tied to a chair. And Froggy sitting in chairs like watching him do that. And they never explain why this kid is tied up, which I thought was hilarious. I thought it was like a really good like 90s style video and that like not everything is explained and it's kind of funny and it's kind of serious. However, and more, if you watch this video,
yes,
near the end, what happens?
The stupid rich boy yes, gets beat up.
Fair enough.
Wait, do they kill him?
I don't know if they I know they beat him up, but it Froggy is playing a show and it rains money. Meanwhile, Vixen 77 have also released a video. It's for Record Store. That's going to be off their upcoming album. If you watch the video for Record Store, what's funny is in this video, there's like the main character is is it Jake? Jake his name or Jock? Damn, what's that guy's name? Jake. So it's funny is like the main character in this video is in real life. His name is Jake. He's a guy in the Philly scene. And in this video, he looks kind of like a cool guy. It's funny how like video makes people look differently. Like I know Jake, he's a nice guy, but he's not like cool guy. But in this video, he's like the cool guy from Stranger Things. It's so funny how video can make people seem different than who they are or seem to be. And I think that is why like a lot of movie stars get like weird or something. Like they start thinking they're the person in the screen when they're not. But anyway, the point being is, and more in this video, there is something passed from one member to another. You recall what that thing was?
Is that the cassette tape?
Yes. Who do you think put out that cassette tape, and more?
Is it John Gentile?
Mm-hmm. I put out that cassette tape about 2 or 3 years ago. I put out that because I was totally thrilled to see my cassette, not the quote, my cassette tape that they wrote, recorded, and did the art for. That I just put out that tape. That cassette tape was only available at the Punk New Sonic Attack with Catbite at one of Catbite's earliest shows, Chris of Crazy and the Brains, and Rodney Anonymous. And that was a very cool show. And there's only 30 copies. So it was a real thrill for me to see that tape. In the video, I really got a kick out of that. Let's see. Let's do.
Hold on. That is so cool that that's your cassette. But the money thing, we got to go back to the money because aren't they throwing the money because they robbed the rich kid? They got his money when they beat him up.
Well, they're still making it rain. So all just I
like,
know.
No, they're just like showing off that they have all this money. I don't think you can take credit for the cassette tape. I don't think you get to take credit for the money.
I'm taking credit for the money because Froggy loved that I made it rain with Froggy Bucks at Summer Soiree 5, and they filmed this video the next week. But I'm not mad about it. I'm actually thrilled about it because honestly, I don't own the concept of making it rain because I stole that from hip hop shows in the 90s. You know, so like I don't own the idea of making it rain. I was just thrilled to see that funny interaction push forward, just like I was thrilled to see my cassette tape in the Vixen 77 video.
I love it.
So let's see here. Let's do two quick more stories. This is kind of a cool story. So I guess it was 2 years ago now, the Damned did Night of a Thousand Vampires, where it was in England, where they tried to have they tried to have the biggest gathering of vampires ever, and everybody that came had to dress like a vampire. And I know Vanian dressed like Nosferatu, but in this video, he's dressed like Bela Lugosi. So maybe Vanian wore two costumes. At any rate, they're finally putting it out as a DVD and a vinyl record. And I'm thrilled they are because like this was a really cool event with a really cool track list where the Damned really did something very neat and interesting and clever. And, here he is dressed like Nosferatu there. Anyways, I just think the Damned have a lot of live albums, probably 30 live albums. Some of them are amazing. Some of them are I think this is going to be a really cool late period Damned album. Like, I'm super excited for this. This is cool.
I think it's going to be cool too. I did this. I do have to read what I wrote while I was watching it. I just as a note to myself, I wrote, why are all the men on stage old and wearing a lot of clothes? And all the women on stage are young and wearing not a lot of clothes. So that, that it did make me wonder.
Yes.
But no, I think this will be cool. I did make me scratch. That one aspect made me scratch my head, but I do think this will be cool.
Well, what is interesting, as punk rockers get older, people tend to think of them as saints. Joe Strummer is a great example. Be like, oh, Joe Strummer, he always did the right thing. No, Joe Strummer did not always do the right thing. He was banging women all across Spain while his wife was giving birth in the 80s. You know what I mean? So what is, you know, likewise, like the Damned were pretty wild boys back in the 70s and early 80s, like really wild boys. I don't know if they did anything mean, but they weren't always, you know, they weren't, you know, I don't know, Ian MacKaye, if you will. And yeah. I don't even know that Ian MacKaye is Ian MacKaye, but everyone says he's a nice guy. So I think
Ian MacKaye was Ian MacKaye.
Yeah. So fair enough. So at any rate, the point being is people think, oh, the Damned, those lovable blokes. The Damned were wild guys back in the day. And people, for some reason, people kind of forget that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, I think the video is going to be cool. And let's just wrap this up talking about one of my. We're going to bounce a lot of these to next week too, because a lot of stuff I want to talk about still. But a Surfboard has put out a new video. The video is called "Never Gonna Be." No, it's a song rather. Never Gonna Be What You Want Me to Be.
Single, right?
It's a standalone digital single. I'm not sure if this is one of the tracks that was produced by Linda Perry, but it's kind of the more grungy side of Surfboard as opposed to the punkier side, or even maybe the grungy, glammy side. I mean, this didn't get a whole lot of impact, and part of that is because like Surfboard like didn't even really, they like announced it, but it was like really hard to find. You know, I feel like when they released their last album, I was like, why didn't this get more press? And it turned out, as we discovered in my interview with them, they were having management problems. I feel like they're having management problems again, because this kind of came out, but like nobody said anything about it. But I thought the track was rad. I know I talk about Surfboard a lot, but I just think they're such a phenomenal band. And I really dug this song. And I think they're one of the coolest bands in punk rock right now, or even of all time. I mean, I just think they're an awesome band. Hallie Bullet, did you dig this track, or am I getting pushed away on the wave by Surfboard?
I didn't think this was like their best track, but also realized of myself that I'm so spoiled because I'm so used to them releasing like a really fun video that like helps me kind of click in with the song. And like, I didn't have that this time, but yeah, I thought it was fine. It seemed like, it seemed like a B-side or a C-side to me.
And more, last like comment.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Again, yeah, same. This isn't my favorite Surfboard track, but I like the name of the song. I like the lyrics, and it was cool to have it more grungy and more like it gave it a different vibe. It gave like Danny Miller's voice a different vibe, like the whole band, like, you know, they're Surfboard because there's something within them that makes them Surfboard, but there's also something that's like, you know, like another dimension of them. So I enjoyed that aspect of it.
And well, there you have it, and more enjoyed an aspect of it. If we all could all do the same. Let's wrap this up. Next week, we're going to have Chris from Crazy in the Brains on the show, and he might have some breaking news. He might have some breaking news, or maybe not. We'll see. And if he does, you'll know it. You'll know it. At any rate, let's play a song by Off. This is Off doing War Above Los Angeles. And we'll see you next week. We'll be right back.
other tricks.